about the law with regard to community caretaking. We are also presently live streaming this recording, right? And so there's going to be some back and forth between the people who are presently taking this class live online. Those of you who were not able to make it, I am so sorry, but thank you so much for signing up this anyway so that we can send you a recorded version. First things first, this is me, John Ween, attorney and senior legal instructor with Blue to Gold Law Enforcement Training. I've been doing this for about 3 years now. I have the honor and the privilege of traveling across the country and training law enforcement officers on search and seizure law, and it truly is an honor and a privilege for me to do so. Prior to this, I did 10 years in Arizona law enforcement. I worked for a suburb of Phoenix. We had about 200 officers, about 200,000 citizens at the time I left. Before entering law enforcement, I got my JD from Pepperdine University School of Law down in Malibu, California. While I was in the LA area, I worked for the LADA's office downtown at the Criminal Courts Building and also at the satellite office in Van Nuys. After graduating from law school, I returned to Arizona, passed the bar, worked for a law firm for about a year before I entered law enforcement. So I have been an attorney since 2011. Some of the things I did as a law enforcement officer: patrol sergeant, SWAT operator, field training officer. Where are my field training officers at? Yeah, give me a shout out there. God bless you guys. Chemical agent, less lethal, FSDD, pepper ball, simmunition, certified force science analyst, and mass casualty preparedness instructor. And guys, I am going to take a moment to make my obligatory plug for the Force Science Institute. If you are wearing body cams in the day-to-day, if you are working with people who are wearing body cams in the day-to-day, do yourself a favor and check out forcescience.com. I don't get any kickback from them. I keep hitting up Bill Lewinsky and trying to get a little bit of that sweet cheddar, right? I'm like, come on, man. Somebody's got to come to your stuff, got to me, right? I plug your class. I plug your organization, every class I teach. But the reason why I do that is because I believe in what they are trying to do. And what they are trying to do is revolutionary. It is more than anybody else is doing. What they are trying to do is apply science to understand the impact of stress on human performance and how that impacts what we recall, what we perceive, versus what our body cam is capturing. Body cams, it's a tool. It's a tool. But my comment is that it's like we gave a child an atom bomb. We don't understand it, and so we cannot expect society to understand it. The reality is we must be better. We must do better, and the way that you can do that is by engaging in self-study. ForceScience.com, they publish all of their studies online for free. You do not have to pay the thousands of dollars to go become a certified force science analyst. Go on the website, engage in some self-study, learn. Might save your life, might save your partner's life, might save your career, might keep you out of prison. All good things in modern policing. Store.bluetogold.com. If you guys are interested in any of our books, I highly recommend, if you do not have our state-specific search and seizure survival guide, do yourself a favor and attend our advanced search and seizure class and get yourself a copy of our state-specific search and seizure survival guide, an incredibly valuable resource. Drugs on Wheels, if you are interested in interdiction case law, if you are interested in proactive policing, that is an incredibly valuable resource, an incredibly girthy tome. That thing is over 700 pages of on-point case law, helping law enforcement officers understand what do courts think is important in identifying some other underlying criminal activity. Articulate, articulate, articulate. That'll help you do it. Hang out afterwards, guys. We're going to do our search and seizure show. So if you have questions, we'll turn on your mic if you let us. No video. Ask the question and we'll try as much as possible to walk through and give you an answer. Disclaimers. Laws and SOPs may be more restrictive. Understand, guys, I got officers from all across the nation here, as you saw. I got officers from all across the nation. And so this is a federal class, right? This is a standard across the nation class. It is not specific to any one state. And so if you are in my more restrictive states, I'm talking to you, Washington. I'm talking to you, Oregon, New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Delaware, Washington. Said that because it's twice. Exactly. Hawaii, Alaska, New Mexico, Understand, guys, your state courts, they interpret your state constitution far more restrictive. California, Florida, Texas, Arizona, Nevada. Yeah, Nevada. Okay. You guys, pretty much in keeping with the federal standard. All right. But regardless of your state court's interpretation of your state constitution, you have to know your laws and you have to know your policies. If you have any doubts, push it up the chain. Push it up the chain. Push it up the chain. Rely on the critical decision-making skills and leadership abilities of those in your chain of command. And finally, this course is legal education, not legal advice. I'm an attorney. I'm not your attorney. I am not telling you what to do in any given situation. I am telling you what the law says. All right, so here is our agenda for today. First up, the basics. Then, after that, community caretaking and pedestrians. Then, vehicles, weapons, vehicles, occupants, inventories, woo, inventories, and homes. Without further ado, let's get into it. So, first off, the basics of community caretaking. Community caretaking functions are non-investigatory intrusions. Essentially, police are trying to help, not convict. And this is incredibly important, right? This is incredibly important because if I want to try to convince a court that this is a community caretaking function in which I am engaged, it is not for a criminal investigatory purpose. And that is incredibly important. Always keep that in mind when we are approaching a situation trying to rely on community caretaking as the justification for our actions. Katie versus Dombrowski, the big dog, right? You guys know this case. You love this case. If you have taken our advanced traffic stops class, we talk about Katie versus Dombrowski. And Katie versus Dombrowski, interesting case. So Dombrowski, he is a Chicago cop, right? And he's hitting a rough patch, to say the least. He's going, he's driving, he's hitting bar after bar after bar in this rented Ford Thunderbird. Eventually, he single vehicle TAs, he crashes out on the side of the road, climbs out of the rented Ford Thunderbird, and starts walking down this rural road. Eventually, a civilian picks him up, and they take him to the local police department, whereupon the local law enforcement drives him back to this rented Ford Thunderbird. And ultimately, they arrest Dombrowski for DUI. And that always tickled me, right? Because I'm like, this is like the late 60s, early 70s. This guy is a Chicago cop, and they arrested him for DUI. Like, how hammered did Dombrowski have to be that he got arrested in the late 60s, early 70s as a cop? Right? I mean, there were a lot of places in this country where 20 years ago, 20 years ago, they were like, here, take the keys, throw them out in the field. Good luck, right? By the time you find those, you'll have sobered up enough. This dude, nope, they hooked him up. All right? So they take him, they tow this rented Ford Thunderbird, and they dump it outside, unsecured, outside of an unsecured service station. Now, Dombrowski starts having some medical issues. Either as a result of his heavy level of intoxication or this vehicle collision. So they take him to the hospital where he slips into a coma. The officers are back at the PD, right? They're processing the paperwork and they're like, oh, yeah, I mean, that guy's a Chicago cop, man. That sucks, right? Yeah. And they're like, wait, hold on a second. That guy was a Chicago cop? And they were like, yeah. He was like, oh, man, did you guys find his gun? And he's like, well, what do you mean? I'm pretty sure Chicago PD is required to carry their firearm with them at all times. Did you guys find a gun? They're like, well, he didn't have one on him, but we didn't really look in, I mean, we didn't look in the car. He just didn't have it on him. They're like, oh, shoot. All right. So one of the officers goes back to this service station, right? He goes into the vehicle and he starts looking around inside the vehicle trying to find this duty weapon. Now, he doesn't find a gun inside the passenger compartment. But he does find a policy book, like a Chicago PD policy book, and he finds a blood-spattered flashlight. Well, that's weird, right? Anyway, so he goes and he pops the trunk. In the trunk, We find a nightstick with Dombrowski stamped on the handle. We find a pair of uniform pants that are blood spattered, and they find a set of Dodge floor mats that are soaked through with blood, still wet to the touch. Those are called clues. So they go to Dombrowski. He's in the hospital, right? He's since regained consciousness. And they're like, "Hey, Dombrowski, listen, man, we were going through your car and we found some stuff and we wanted to talk to you about it." And Dombrowski, I mean, he's no man's fool, right? This is not his first rodeo, maybe on this side of it. So what does he do? He lawyers up, right? He lawyers up. So he says, "Get me an attorney." So they bring him a lawyer, confers with his counsel. After a while, the attorney comes out and he says, "Listen, guys, I talked to my client, and against my direction, right, against my better counsel, he has said he wants me to give you a message. You need to go to the Dombrowski family farm. You'll find a body there." And so they go to the Dombrowski family farm. They find his personally owned Dodge vehicle there. There is additional evidence of a violent struggle inside the personally owned vehicle. And then nearby, buried in a shallow grave, they find Dombrowski's victim, beaten over the head and then shot, execution style. So Dombrowski, he's charged with murder, right? And his argument is a simple one. What are you guys doing in my car? Carroll Doctrine. I get it. It's been around for darn near 50 years now. But the Carroll Doctrine tells us where police have probable cause to believe a vehicle contains evidence of a crime, they can search anywhere inside that vehicle that could reasonably contain the evidence for which they have probable cause to believe is contained therein. That's not where we are, is it? You didn't have probable cause to believe there's any evidence of crime inside here. You're just searching my car willy-nilly, violating my constitutional rights. As a result, the evidence found must be suppressed. And the United States Supreme Court? Well, they disagreed. Local police officers frequently investigate vehicle accidents in which there is no claim of criminal liability and engage in what, for want of a better term, may be described as community caretaking functions, totally divorced from the detection, investigation, or acquisition of evidence relating to the violation of a criminal statute. And so, community caretaking is born. When it comes to people, let's talk about people. So, ultimately, the question is, when can you seize a person under community caretaking? What must you articulate in order to have a court conclude that they seizure under community caretaking is reasonable? Police may stop a person in order to investigate whether the person is in peril, distress, need, or aid, and this is supported by objective facts, meaning an objectively reasonable person would recognize that there is a question of peril, distress, need, or aid. Objective, meaning without regard to an individual's subjective mindset. So, when can you take a person into custody under community caretaking? There is a stop, right? A stop, and now we are going full on custody. Community caretaking allows police to take a person into protective custody if they are a danger to themselves or others, right? And so, as an example, the naked lady running through Tolleson screaming she was trash. But that's every day, right? That's Tuesday. I don't, what's different about this one? Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I don't know. Okay. Protective custody detentions must comply with state law. So make sure that you are in compliance with state law, guys. Understand, right? If we are taking someone's freedom away, if we're taking them in, if we're taking them into the hospital, if we're taking them into a mental health facility, understand the limitations of state law, understand where your authority stems from under state law. A highly intoxicated person entered a livestock show, did not have passes, did not answer questions, seemed disoriented, and it was 6 degrees outside. Police took him into protective custody. The argument there being, If we let this man go, what's he gonna do? He is going to die. And ultimately, the court said, based on the totality of the circumstances, he was a danger to himself, and so this was a valid community caretaking seizure. In Alfano versus Lynch, right? Factually distinguishable. Factually distinguishable. In this case, we are talking a concert. The subject was highly intoxicated but was still communicating. However, he was told to leave the concert. The officers then. Trying this again. All right. Technical difficulties. A person called the Veterans Administration, VA hospital, and said he drank a lot of alcohol, was suicidal, had an adverse reaction. It is recording. Had an adverse reaction to meds, had guns, and had a history of suicidal threats. Police took him into custody for a mental eval. Police had probable cause he was a danger to himself or others. Regardless of the decedent's disputed behavior, the initial VA call, coupled with knowledge of his prior suicide threats and the belief that he possessed firearms, established to an objectively reasonable police officer that he was a danger to himself. Moreover, Treadway concluded that the situation at the house was too unstable for any of the three officers there to leave the premises to obtain the emergency commitment order. Accordingly, the circumstances facing the defendants were exigent, and we hold that the undisputed facts in this case establish that the officer's conduct was objectively reasonable. And ultimately, that's what we want to be. So, Wilson versus State, Maryland case. Early in the morning, an officer is driving down the street and he sees a tarp laying in the roadway. He stops and confirms that's no tarp, that is a human being. He takes him into protective custody. The guy's laying in the roadway. If we leave, what's going to happen? However, ultimately, in this case, right, the officer handcuffed the defendant, intending to take him to the hospital. The defendant resisted, leading to a physical struggle and his arrest. During processing, the defendant attempted to dispose of marijuana. And so, what are we doing here? I don't know. How do we feel about this? I don't know. Ultimately, what should we have done here? Take him to the hospital, right? Police did not have probable cause. He was a danger to himself or others. Yeah. That one's a tough one, right? That one's a tough one. He's laying in the roadway. Placing handcuffs on petitioner to transport him to the hospital for medical treatment under the circumstances herein was not reasonable. Petitioner committed no crime and was not suspected of criminal activity. If medical treatment was necessary, the record does not indicate any reason why an ambulance was not called. Officer Zimmerer's actions exceeded those permitted under the community caretaking function. His seizure of petitioner was therefore unreasonable. And again, guys, this goes back to the point of, can I automatically handcuff someone during every detention? Can I automatically handcuff somebody during every detention? No. What do I need to articulate if I want handcuffs during a detention to be reasonable and not a per se arrest? Yeah, Ethan got it. Risk of fight or risk of flight? Again, not a high standard, not a hard standard to articulate, but you have to articulate it. You can't just automatically handcuff everyone. Articulate risk of fight or risk of flight. How about weapons in vehicles? You may search and seize firearms if you articulate that a member of the public may gain access to them. Driver was arrested for DUI. Police saw a revolver on the passenger seat. While seizing it for safekeeping, they found ammo to a different firearm and looked in a locked trunk and found narcotics evidence in plain view. Do I have a reasonable basis to believe that there are additional firearms inside this vehicle? And do I believe that the officers are truly engaged in a community caretaking function here to secure these firearms? If the answer to both of those questions is yes, then we are reasonable, right? Searching for another firearm was lawful under community caretaking. This is an appropriate exercise of the community caretaking functions, which the police have a responsibility to discharge. The police followed their routine procedure for securing and inventorying the automobile's contents. Beautiful. There you go. I believe that the officers were truly in there for a non-criminal investigatory purpose. Okay. Guns, guns, guns in the trunk. Arrested driver told officer that there was a gun in the trunk in the car he would leave in a parking lot. Officer then searched a loose door panel for more firearms and found kilos of cocaine. I tell you guys, Katie versus Dombrowski, Michigan versus Long, all of these cases, South Dakota versus Opperman, all of these cases that deal with community caretaking. It's fascinating, right? Because what do we teach? Is the subjective intent of a law enforcement officer irrelevant in a Fourth Amendment analysis? The answer is yes. You better tell me yes, right? The subjective intent of a law enforcement officer is irrelevant in a Fourth Amendment analysis. The Fourth Amendment prohibits unreasonable actions, not improper thoughts. I don't care why the officer did what he did. I just care if what he did was reasonable, right? However, there are exceptions to that general rule that I don't care about an officer's subjective intent, and those exceptions are community caretaking and administrative search. So if you are out there doing, class three inspections on CDL vehicles, right, on commercial vehicles, if you are doing that as a pretext for a criminal investigatory purpose, if you are doing that because your drug guys said, "Hey, I think this is a load vehicle. Stop it and perform that level three inspection on it while we get a warrant, while we get canine, whatever," right? That is not going to be a valid inspection. That's not going to be an invalid administrative search. Just like if you have the intent to search a vehicle for evidence, it's not going to be valid community caretaking function. And so you look at this, right? Gary's exactly right. Just like pretextual stops, right? The intent of the stop doesn't matter as long as I've got an actual basis for stopping that vehicle. But you look at this, and I tell you, if in community caretaking, if in inventory, the subjective intent of the law enforcement officer is relevant, does the actions here, right? Does the officer's actions indicate that this is not for a community caretaking purpose? This is actually to conduct a criminal investigatory search, right? Is it reasonable to think that this guy might have stored another firearm inside this loose door panel? Is that where you keep your guns, right? Driving around and be like, "Hey, officer, just so you know, there's a gun in the car." And he's like, "All right, pop out. I'm gonna have to pull all the door panels off." Okay. All right. Nope. That's not where Kathy keeps her gat. Nope. Searching for another firearm was not lawful in a loose door panel. You got to be reasonable. The officer's actions in bending over the corner of the vent in the door panel and looking inside, then reaching inside the cavity between the door panel and door to retrieve a paper sack, cannot fairly be described as a community caretaking function within the meaning of Katie. The officer had recovered and secured the pistol, as well as its magazine and ammunition, before he looked further. There is no testimony in the record and no finding by the district court that the officer suspected the presence of any other weapon. Gotta be reasonable, guys. Got to be reasonable. So, how about occupants of vehicles? You may be able to briefly detain a vehicle's occupants if you reasonably believe the occupants need assistance. Again, it's going to come down to articulation, right? Are you objectively reasonable in reaching the conclusion that you did? State versus Crime, New Jersey case. Car waited at light for 10 seconds. Okay, so it turns green, it turns, it's a red light, and then we wait 10 seconds before we turn right. Okay, is that unreasonable? Is that suspicious? Am I concerned that there might be something more going on here? And the court said no. Now, state versus elders, guys, right? So stopping at a red light for 10 seconds is not objectively reasonable to conclude those occupants need help. Okay. State versus elders. Now, this is an interesting case, right? In this case, officers drive by, again, New Jersey. Where are my New Jersey guys at? What are you guys doing out there, right? You're like, it wasn't me. This is 2007, before my time. Maybe, maybe not, right? So, officers drive by and they see two vehicles on the side of the road. And it looks like, one of them's having some kind of mechanical difficulties, and the other vehicle stopped to check on them. And so the officers proceed, they go to their call for service. Then, after they handle the call for service, they're driving back by and they see the vehicle is still stopped there. And so they pull over, they get behind the vehicles, and they walk up and they make contact with them. And they're like, hey guys, what's going on? And they're just like, oh, we're having some issues with this car. Like the gas tank isn't like secured. It's like rattling around as we're driving. And so they're like, oh, okay. Like, do you guys need any help? And they're like, nah, like we're good. Don't worry about it. We got it handled. And they're like, okay, all right. And so the officers walk back and they make contact with the other driver of the vehicle. They start talking to her, the back vehicle, and she kind of explains what's going on. And the officers start just getting this idea where like something isn't right. And so like they walk back up and like they're standing there watching these guys trying to fix the gas tank. And then they like order everybody up over against like the parking barrier, and they're like, hey, stand over there, right? And then they start pulling them apart, one at a time. They pull them away from the group, and they start talking to them, trying to get to the bottom of this. Ultimately, it turns out that this is a load vehicle, and the reason why the gas tank has fallen off is because they've modified the body of the car and they've jammed so many narcotics up there that the damn gas tank won't stay in place. All right. They try to argue this was a community caretaking stop, right? This was a community caretaking contact. It wasn't a seizure. It was to help them, right? It was to help them. That was the whole purpose of this. And the court looked at this and they said, we don't believe you, right? We don't believe you because you asked them, do you guys need any help? They said, no, we're good, thanks. And then you guys hung out, which, I guess is your right. You can do that, right? I can get back there. I can turn my rear decks on and be like, all right, well, I got nothing going on right now. I'm just gonna hang out and make sure nobody rear ends you as much as possible. Okay. They said, the officers also said, well, I can't just leave the car there. Like it's a concern, like it's a potential danger. And they're like, well, did you guys call for a tow truck? No, never called for a tow truck. If you were concerned that these vehicles were a danger and shouldn't be there anymore and were causing a potential hazard, well, then you have an obligation to do something about it. Start that tow truck. If they get the vehicle fixed beforehand and the situation resolves itself, awesome. Then I can cancel the tow truck. Did they go get tools out of their car and then try to help with that? No. I mean, did they have tools in their car? Yeah, the officers had tools in their car. Did they keep bringing those up and help them? No. Right. And so Hoyt says, what about a consent contact that turns to RS? Man, I'm awesome, right? I'm good with it. But here's the issue, right? You got to have reasonable suspicion before you seize. Reasonable suspicion is what's required to detain, right? If you don't have RS and you're seizing people, that's a violation of their constitutional rights. And so at the point where the officers say, hey, all right, everybody, now step over here up against this parking barrier, right? Up against this side on the shoulder here. At that point, would an objectively reasonable person feel free to disregard and go about their business without fear of legal repercussion? No. And did they submit? Yes, they did. Accordingly, under show of authority, they are seized under the Fourth Amendment. And in many states like New Jersey, right, New Mexico, we're not even requiring them to have submission. They're just seized as soon as an objectively reasonable person would not feel free to disregard and go about their business, right? So if at that point I don't have RS, going to be a bad, bad day. That is the red domino that knocks everything else out. Okay. Now, the question is, would conflicting stories from the front car to the rear car be RS? No, that alone would not, right? That is a factor, absolutely, right? Time of day, high crime area, vehicle commonly, type of vehicle commonly used to traffic narcotics, abnormal, unusual, pervasive, persistent nervousness, extreme nervousness. Okay. Tell me more. Give me more, right? I love it. Conflicting stories plus. Yes. Conflicting stories plus. Tell me more. 10 miles per hour at 4 a.m. Strive for five, baby. Strive for five. Take the Strive for Five challenge, James. You know. All right. Now, State versus Martinez, guys. Is this different than sitting at a light for 10 seconds? 10 miles per hour, 4 a.m., no other vehicles in the area, residential neighborhood, officer is very familiar with this area, no other foot traffic, no other vehicle traffic. What is my concern? What do I think might be going on here? DUI? Love it. Reasonable suspicion is a moderate chance, right? They're just lost. They're casing. Maybe they're casing. Maybe they're just lost. What if they're elderly and they're having some kind of a medical emergency? Okay. Awesome, right? There's a whole lot of justifications here. If that person is lost, should I stop them and help them out? I know this area. Oh, you need help getting back to the interstate? Follow me, good fella. Wait, drugs? Commonwealth versus Livingstone. Officer drives by. He sees a vehicle stopped on the side of the road. He sees a vehicle stopped on the side of the road. Drive by. Okay. Comes back. Vehicle still sitting there. So he pulls up behind the vehicle, gets out, and goes up and makes contact with the driver. Excuse me. I take that back. He pulls up next to the vehicle, rolls down his window. He makes contact with the driver. And he says, "Hey, what's going on?" And she says, "Oh, so sorry. I just pulled over. I'm trying to put driving directions into my GPS." Okay. So, no indication of impairment, no abnormal, extreme, unusual, persistent nervousness, no verbal fillers, no target glancing, nothing like that. Nevertheless, the officer pulls in front of her, gets out, walks back, makes contact with her. As a result, he determines she is DUI. And so, when he is asked about this initial contact, the officer's response is, "I contact every car pulled to the side of the highway." Is this community caretaking? Is this legitimate? Right? And maybe this is true, but I ask you, is that the way I always do it? That's the way I do it every time? Is that ever sufficient articulation? And the answer is no. Because personally, I don't believe that he contacts every car pulled to the side of the highway like this. I don't believe it. And even if it is true, that alone is not sufficient justification. I made contact with her. I saw no indication of impairment. I saw no indication of concern. She told me she didn't need help. She gave me a plausible explanation of what she was doing. Okay. Now you want to turn it into consensual contact, right? If you want to turn it into consensual contact, well, get yourself away from there, right? Get behind her. Don't block her in and stroll up on the passenger side. Wave and say, "Hey, listen, I'm out here in the middle of nowhere. I got nothing to do. Where are you going? Let me help you out, right? Can I give you driving directions? If we're going close, maybe you can follow me, right?" All right. This case is a great reminder that a just because is never a recognized exception. So, what would you articulate, right? How do we articulate it differently? Compare that one to this. Commonwealth versus Robertson, 18-year veteran, drives by, and sees two motionless occupants inside a car late at night, and he has told the court he has found dead people in cars before. Should an officer stop and check on that vehicle? Do we want officers to do that? Do we want to encourage officers to do that? Absolutely. Absolutely, we do. And so that is the kind of articulation that we need. This is the kind of articulation that we need. We didn't know if it was medical, if he's just asleep, or if it's a DUI. I mean, let's be honest. I'm looking for criminal activity at that time. I'm not gonna, lie to you. But, I didn't know if something was wrong with him, or if they were just drunk, high, or just sleeping. Yeah? How many of us have found somebody slumped over at the gas pumps with a syringe sticking out of their arm, right? Yeah. Yeah, it's a bad day. It's a bad day. Do we want officers just driving away from that? Letting that person just OD and die there? I don't think that's the world we want to live in, right? I don't think that's the world we want to live in. Never assume the court will automatically support what you did. Articulate why you did what you did. So let's talk inventories. Let's talk inventories. South Dakota versus Opperman. How many of you guys have been to Vermilion, South Dakota? Show of hands. Oh, all right. We got some. All right. We got some. Bernie, Michael, all right. Parker's been there. All right. All right. I'm telling you guys right now, okay? If you guys ever go to Vermilion, South Dakota, be careful where you park because they don't play in Vermilion, South Dakota. And Opperman, he found that out the hard way. All right? So, officer's driving by and he sees Opperman's vehicle parked in an area that has restricted time zone for parking, right? You can park there between 8 a.m. and 5 p.m. It's 5:10 p.m. So the officer stops, walks over, slaps a parking citation on Opperman's vehicle. Couple hours later, he's driving back by. Guess what? Opperman's vehicle still parked there in blatant disregard of the local parking ordinance. Second ticket, slaps it on there. A few hours later, must have been a slow night in Vermilion, South Dakota. Officer drives back by. That vehicle is still parked there in flagrant disregard of the law, metaphorical middle finger to this police officer. And so, what does he do? He stops. He slaps that third parking citation on there. Three strikes. You're out. So, he calls for a tow truck. While he's waiting for the tow, he looks into the vehicle and he sees. Oh, there's a gold watch sitting in the center console. And so he pulls out his trusty Slim Jim, sticks it in there, right? In the door, pops the door, opens the door, goes in, and starts inventorying the contents of the vehicle on a department-issued form. And as he's going through and writing out that inventory form, he opens the glove box and what does he find? The ganja, the Mary Jane, the devil's lettuce, the stickiest of the icky. That's right. A bag of that marijuana with an H. And so the next day, Opperman shows up to get his vehicle out of hock. And what happens? The Vermilion Police Department swoop in. They snatch this dude up and they say, "We've got a nice, quiet community here in Vermilion, South Dakota. We don't need you darn hopheads with your wacky tabacky smoking it up, rolling doobies in our city." Opperman argues, "This is a violation of his constitutional rights, man, right? Love it. Okay. You're violating my constitutional rights." And he argues this all the way up to the Supreme Court. And what does the Supreme Court say? No, this is reasonable. The Vermilion Police Department was indisputably engaged in a caretaking search of a lawfully impounded automobile. The inventory was conducted only after the car had been impounded for multiple parking violations. The owner, having left his car illegally parked for an extended period and thus subject to impoundment, was not present to make other arrangements for the safekeeping of his belongings. As in Katie, there is no suggestion whatever that this standard procedure was a pretext concealing an investigatory police motive. And guys, I will tell you, there it is, right there, right? That is the crux of the matter. There was no suggestion whatever that this standard procedure was a pretext concealing an investigatory police motive. And you can't use inventory as a pretext concealing an investigatory police motive. You may inventory a vehicle if you abide by your department's policy and your primary reason that you tow the car is not for evidence. Policy, not an evidentiary search. Both are required. However, if you don't have discretion to tow, then it really shouldn't matter why you did it. Does state law require you to tow under these circumstances? Your driving suspended, and license, registration suspended, no insurance, whatever. Are you required to tow those vehicles? Well, then it really shouldn't matter why you're doing it, but you should be inventorying effectively. As applied to the seizure of an automobile, the community caretaking function turns in great part on the police officer's reason for seizing the vehicle. The officer must have a solid, non-investigatory reason for impounding a car. The decision to seize need be on the basis of something other than suspicion of evidence of criminal activity. Impoundment may not be a mere subterfuge for investigation. Of course, if the officer has a proper non-investigatory reason, she may act on it even if she also has, as will often be the case, a belief that impoundment and inventorying will find evidence of a crime. So why do we inventory? We want to protect the owner's property, we want to defend against spurious claims of theft, and we want to secure dangerous items. Now, guys, I got a question for you, and I need you to consider this, right? Do some soul searching. If I arrest the driver for something like driving on a suspended license, whatever, okay? And I am going to tow the vehicle, and I do not have probable cause to believe that there is evidence of a crime inside that vehicle. If the passenger wants to remove items from that vehicle prior to the tow truck's arrival, should I allow the passenger, with the driver's permission, and maybe if him signing a release of liability form, should I allow the passenger to remove items from that vehicle? Okay. Because again, why am I inventorying? It is for a non-criminal investigatory purpose, right? If you're telling me you have reasonable suspicion to believe that they are armed and dangerous and there's weapons inside that vehicle, that changes things for me. I'm talking, we're just doing an inventory. If you are just doing an inventory, is it in your best interest to have less crap in that vehicle before you inventory it? Yes, that makes it easier for you. Right? Yes, by all means, right? Take it, right? Take all that stuff. There you go. Okay. Take it all out. I get it out of there, right? Yeah, I don't want it in here. Okay. That makes it easier for me. Less for me to put on this form. Okay. Again, we're saying no probable cause to believe that evidence of a crime inside there. No RS. Okay. And Forrest is saying, does the owner have to give permission? Yeah, I mean, the driver, I would ask the driver. I would say, hey man, like what's in there that belongs to you? What's in there that belongs to the passenger? We're gonna tow your vehicle and we're gonna impound it for X amount of days. What do you want out of that car? Can the passenger take it? Do you want to give stuff to the passenger? Okay. Now, again, you guys do you and be reasonable, right? If the driver's in there by themselves, okay. Aston, I mean, I understand your policy, right? I understand your policy says that. I got to inventory everything inside that vehicle. The passenger is allowed to take nothing out. Is that what the policy says? Because if the passenger is sitting in there with her purse in her lap, you darn well better let her take her purse out of that car before you inventory it. I'm just saying, let's be reasonable. Why is the purse different? She's sitting there with the purse in her lap, and then she's got a backpack on the back seat. Oh, she's got, oh yeah, I got a box full of my crap in the trunk. Why is that different than the purse in my lap? Yeah, be reasonable. Okay. I agree. All right. I agree. We're doing an inventory. Keep it in your mind. Keep it straight in your mind, right? And I'll tell you guys, case law refers to it as an inventory search. I understand it does. Your policy probably refers to it as an inventory search. I will tell you right now, when I teach report writing, when I teach my officers, when I write reports, it's an inventory. It is not an inventory search because that way, every time I write that I conducted an inventory of the items in this vehicle, it is clear in my mind what I am doing. I am documenting these items. That is all I'm doing. Protect the owner's property, defend against spurious claims, secure dangerous items. So, articulate one of these reasons. Illegally parked, blocking traffic, risk of theft or vandalism, required by policy or law. Can you ask her if you can look inside her bag to confirm that it's hers? Sure. Yeah, no, I'm not arguing it's not a search, guys, right? I understand under the legal definition, it is a search. You are intruding into a place where this person has a reasonable expectation of privacy. You are still physically trespassing with the intent to gather information. Okay. I refer to it as an inventory when I articulate in my report. That way is always clear in my mind. There is a difference between an inventory and an investigatory search. Beautiful. Okay. Yeah. I mean, you can ask her, yeah, can I look inside your purse before you take it? But then you're going to have to convince the court that we are talking consent freely and voluntarily given. So, red flags. Ooh, Tori, does this include moving the vehicle to avoid the tow with or without consent to avoid tow case law? I don't really even know what all that means, but I guess the question is, help me out here. Help me if I'm understand this. Hey, can I just move the car off the roadway? No, you're not allowed to drive. You're under arrest. Can the passenger move the car off the roadway? I'm not gonna let him. Right? If the vehicle, if there's no good registration, if there's no insurance, if the vehicle is properly registered and the arrestee wants to give them the vehicle, we should give them the vehicle. Yeah. Okay. I mean, I mean, how far are we going to take that, right? What happens when I crash a car? I'm going to get in there, I'm going to drive that? Yeah. And, I don't know what your experience is, Tori, but a lot of those cars, I don't want to put my butt on the driver's seat. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to be inventorying that, much less taking my sweet little fanny in my uniform pants and setting them in the bed bugs. Anyway, red flags, no community caretaking rationale articulated. Tow is called only after a thorough inventory is conducted, right? A thorough inventory is conducted. What does this mean? This means that maybe had I not found what I found, I never would have called the tow truck to begin with. Or I didn't call the tow truck until I was done with my inventory, so I would have as much time as I needed to conduct my thorough inventory. I didn't want to be interrupted. Tow not typically called for in same situations. Area searched not typical, right? I don't know about you guys, but I know for me, like I always store my valuables in the car up between the windshield and the headliner, right? I always store my valuables up there. So whenever I inventory a vehicle, I jam my fingers up between the headliner and the windshield. And then this time I found drugs. It was weird. Or your policy is not followed, right? My policy says leave the vehicle legally parked if it's legally parked. My policy says give it to a passenger if it's registered and has insurance and they have a driver's license. But for whatever reason, I just didn't want to this time. I just decided to tow it, and then I found drugs. Watch out for these red flags. Courts will look for them to say this is not a valid inventory. Commonwealth versus Landamus. I love this, right? Because in this case, officers find a vehicle that was involved in a burglary 2 weeks prior. Vehicle's sitting there, and they're like, huh, what are we gonna do here? What are we gonna do here? And so they call up the officer, you know, that one officer, and they do a deep dive into city code. And they find a city code ordinance that none of them have ever heard of or used before. However, it gives them the authority to tow this vehicle. And then they tow the vehicle, inventory it prior to tow, inventory it prior to tow, and they find evidence of additional crimes inside. Is this an inventory? The answer is no. Yep. That is not an inventory. Since there was no probable cause to believe the vehicle would yield evidence of the crime, no exigent circumstances, no lawful inventory search, or a search pursuant to a valid warrant, this evidence must be suppressed at trial. Cops had discretion to tow a vehicle under their policy. However, they testified that something else was going on besides just a suspended license. The car was legally parked at the time, and no community caretaking rationale was provided. Dun dun dun. Looks bad. Sounds bad. All bad is bad. There was sufficient evidence this inventory was a pretext search for evidence. All right, guys. This is the case, right? This is your worst case scenario case. In this case, Shawnee Crawl comes to local law enforcement and he says, "Hey, my roommate Alice is missing. I need to make a missing persons report. I don't know where she's been. She's been gone for like 3 days." And so the officers open up a missing person investigation. And as a result of this investigation, they go to one of Crawl's friends' house and they're like, "Hey, we're looking for Alice. Have you seen Alice recently?" And he says, "Nah, I haven't." And they're like, "Yeah, you know, Crawl, he came in and he reported this, he reported Alice as a missing person." And the friend is like, "Oh, you know, that's funny, right? It's funny that you mention Crawl because he came over here the other day and he parked his car in my driveway. And like, I've called him a bunch of times and I'm like, hey, man, come get your car back. I don't want it in my driveway. And he hasn't come back and gotten it yet. Will you guys tow that vehicle for me? Will you tow it out of my driveway? I don't want it in my driveway anymore." What do you guys think? If a civilian asked you that, would you do it? You know, good community service, right? Y'all are public servants after all, right? Servant me, right? No? 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 So if I want that car out of my driveway, what do I need to do? Yeah. Call your own darn tow truck, right? We don't tow vehicles off of people's driveways. You know, absent some kind of extreme situation. We're not doing this a favor for you now, right? All right. So one of the officers is like, "No, we don't do that." And then another officer's like, "Well, what, that. Hold up a second, man. Like, what if we did this guy a solid, you know, and like, you know, towed the car for him?" And so they're like, "Oh, yeah. All right, man. Yeah, no, we'll help you out." So they call a tow truck, they go over, they start inventorying the vehicle. They open the trunk, and what do they find? Worst case scenario, they find Alice's body, raped and murdered. Okay, so who's our suspect? Crawl. We go after Crawl for murder. Crawl argues this evidence is inadmissible. This evidence is inadmissible. That's what they're saying. Why? Because why were those officers inside that vehicle? They were inside that vehicle for a non-inventory purpose. They were using inventory as a pretext for an investigatory purpose. They wanted to rummage through that guy's car, and they found some very damning evidence. And the court said, because the court found the officer's intent on towing the car was for investigatory purposes and not in good faith under community caretaking, the dead body was suppressed and Mr. Crawl got away with murder. This decision was upheld by the North Dakota Supreme Court. An inventory search is not an exception to the warrant requirement if it is carried out in the midst of a criminal investigation and there is no evidence the police were concerned with protecting or safeguarding either their interests or the owner's property interests. And so, yes, as worst case scenario, we inventoried this vehicle, we had an ulterior motive, it was not a true inventory, and the evidence found as a result suppressed. Now, I will tell you, they tried Crawl again using circumstantial evidence, right? Her body, all the evidence on it was inadmissible. So they tried him anyway for murder, right? Using circumstantial evidence. And I will tell you, if you have ever doubted that there is a special place in hell for some defense attorneys, let me disabuse you of that notion right now. During trial, during closing arguments, Crawl's defense attorney, knowing full well that his client raped and murdered a woman, and the only reason why the jury was not able to see her body and consider the evidence found on it was because the officers screwed up. That officer, I'm sorry, that defense attorney had the temerity, the audacity, during closing arguments, to look those jurors in the eye and tell them the government has absolutely failed to carry its burden in this case. The government has failed to even show that Alice is dead. She could walk through the doors of this courtroom right now. Oh, mama, right? If I'm co-counsel on that guy sits down at the end of closing arguments and I'm like, damn, bro, you just made Satan blush. Ultimately, he was found guilty. He is, however, appealing that decision. If police want to search a vehicle for evidence, but they don't have PC and they don't have consent and they have discretion to tow, but they wouldn't if not for this ulterior motive, what should they do? No PC, no consent. I have discretion to tow, but I wouldn't if not for this ulterior motive. What do we do, guys? What do we do, Tori? I don't have PC. Amato's got it. Let it go. You'll never see me cry, guys. I'm not going to be the one that loses inventory for law enforcement officers across the nation. All right. Let's hope that's it's never going away. It's never going away. That song is going to live in infamy. All right, Holmes. The United States Supreme Court ruled in Coniglia versus Strom that police officers' community caretaking duties do not justify a warrantless searches and seizures in the home. Okay? Community caretaking, post Coniglia versus Strom, does not apply to the home. So, Coniglia versus Strom, Mr. and Mrs. Strom are involved in a spirited discussion. And as anyone who has been married longer than a month can readily understand, Mr. Coniglia goes upstairs, he gets a gun, he comes back downstairs, he throws it on the dining room table, and he says, "Sweetheart, why don't you just shoot me and get me out of my misery? Derek, I had no PC for that vehicle, baby. I had no PC. I had no consent. I have discretion to tow, but I wouldn't if not for my ulterior motive. Come on, man. No PC, no warrant. All right, where are we at? Where are we at? All right. Why don't you just shoot me and get me out of my misery? I don't think I've ever been in that relationship. If you have, peace be with you." Right. So the next day, she leaves for the night, right? She does not take him up on it. She leaves for the night. The next day, she calls police and she's like, "Hey, will you guys come do a civil standby with me just so I can get my stuff out of the house?" They go to the house, they make contact with Mr. Coniglia. He's like, "Listen, guys, I'm not suicidal, right? I was just upset. The gun wasn't even loaded. I think it was a test. I think he wanted to see if she was going to take him up on it, right? Ah, and then the gun's not loaded. Ha ha, joke's on you, right? Now I know where you're at. Anyway, the gun wasn't loaded. I'm not suicidal." And they're like, "Listen, Mr. Coniglia, we're concerned, man. We're worried about you, right? We don't want to leave. We don't want to see anything happen to you." And he's like, "All right, guys, listen, here is what I will do. I will voluntarily go and get myself a mental health evaluation. I will do this voluntarily on one condition. And that condition is you don't take my guns." And they were like, "Of course not, Mr. Coniglia. We're not worried about your guns. We don't want to take your guns. We want to make sure you're safe." And so he's like, "All right, guys." So he goes, he signs himself in for that mental health evaluation, and the officers go back to his house and sees all of his guns. So he gets out of mental health evaluation, the head shrinker, right? Stamps, not crazy. He goes home to find that his gun safe has been cleaned out. And so he goes to the local law enforcement. He says, "What the hell, guys? You told me you weren't going to take my guns. Look, not crazy. Give me my guns back." And that local law enforcement agency was like, "No." Ooh. Let me ask you guys, how do you feel about that? How do you feel about that? This guy went voluntarily. The police had no authority to make him do it. He went voluntarily to go do a mental health evaluation on the condition that they wouldn't take his guns. He went voluntarily. He didn't have to. He went. The officers then took advantage of that opportunity to go in and remove all of his firearms, and they argued community caretaking. He was not committed, Megan. They had no basis to commit him. Yeah. No bueno. And then the government's like, "Come on, right? Come on. Don't take community caretaking away from us. We need community caretaking, your honors, right? If you take community caretaking away from us, lives will be lost." And the Supreme Court disagreed. Why? Because the Supreme Court said, "We have also held that law enforcement officers may enter private property without a warrant when certain exigent circumstances exist, including the need to render emergency assistance to an injured occupant or to protect an occupant from imminent injury." So, what the Supreme Court said is, listen, guys, in these circumstances that the government is talking about needing community caretaking, please don't take this away from us. If you do, lives will be lost. In those circumstances, guess what? You already have another well-recognized and narrowly defined exception. And that is the emergency aid doctrine. You don't need both. Once the emergency is over, stop and get a warrant. Go through judicial process if you want to do things like, I don't know, take somebody's guns away from them. So the emergency aid exception, objectively reasonable basis to believe that an emergency exists, and the conduct has a nexus to that emergency. objectively reasonable basis to believe that an emergency exists and the conduct has a nexus to that emergency. What you do inside the home is reasonably related to resolving the emergency that you objectively believe is occurring in that house. The Supreme Court has found it plainly reasonable for officers to enter a house to quell violence where they have an objectively reasonable basis for believing both that the injured adult might need help and that the violence was just beginning. Awesome. Donald, I love it, man. Bad facts make bad case law. All right, so he's there, he's investigating kidnapping, right? This guy runs away from him earlier, okay? And so the question is, based on that interaction, does he have an objectively reasonable basis to believe that there is an emergency occurring inside that house? You got to articulate it, right? You got to articulate it. Don't clear houses by yourself. And if you're going there to look at your kidnapping suspect, get yourself a warrant, right? Okay. The reasonableness of an emergency home entry depends on whether the circumstances viewed objectively justify the action. In other words, whether law enforcement had an objectively reasonable basis to believe that there was an immediate need to protect the lives or safety of themselves or others. Did you guys find this information useful? I hope you did. All right. I hope you did. Okay. Community caretaking. Pedestrians, vehicles, homes. All right, help us improve and develop future training that benefits you the most. You guys, I want your feedback. I want your input. All right. The reason why we at Blue to Gold do what we do is to be a benefit to law enforcement officers across the country. All right. So, what classes are you guys looking for? What topics do you want to have us discuss? Please reach out to us. Say, hey, I was just teaching in Northern California here, and they're like, we need an organized retail theft class. And everybody in the Bay Area, they want an organized retail theft class. I'm like, all right, like California made shoplifting illegal again, right? And the criminals are losing their minds. They're like, I don't understand. I can't just go into a store and take things anymore. Now it's a felony. And, dogs and cats living together, the world is losing their mind. Next thing you know, New Mexico is gonna outlaw shoplifting. Okay? My gosh. Okay? My gosh. It's gonna happen. I have no doubt. Why? Because we can't live in a world where Walmart has all of their products behind glass. You can't do it. I'm sorry. Okay. Drugs on Wheels, book into an online class. Gary, we've got our Drugs on Wheels class, man. It's not an online class, not yet, but it is a class. Advanced Interdiction Case Law. Advanced Interdiction Case Law. We also have a 2-day Ultimate Interdiction Case Law class. Teresa, do we have links for advanced interdiction case law? Do we have interdiction for that 2-day class? Please, right? If we got those, baby, we got those, throw them into the chat or go to our website, bluetogold.com. Check out advanced interdiction case law. Love it. All right. And Evan, I don't know when we're doing another CSSI class. I do not know, right? If you go to our website, check it out, see if that's coming up. If it is not, then have your agency have us out to your area, man. If there's a lot of interest in the area, we would love to do it. Okay. All right. Michael, hold on to that one, man. Hold on to that one. Okay. All right. If you guys want more Blue to Gold content, please scan this QR code. Follow us on social media. We're putting out a lot of good stuff on social media, a lot of upcoming classes, events, more information. Thank you. And Nicholas, yes, you will. Check out 100, 1,000 plus videos, man. 1,000 plus videos answering your search and seizure questions. All right. Scan that QR code to subscribe. Are there any free in-person events, Derek? How much more can I do for you? All right. You take and you take and you're never satisfied. I've dated people like you before. All right, guys. Trivia time. Are you ready? I think I probably need to stop recording at some point. I don't know. We're having a good time. I'm gonna stop recording right now. Those of you guys who were not able to be here in person, I am sorry, but you don't get to play trivia. Next time, hopefully you can make it live online. Get yourself something special, something nice for the loved one. Maybe a t-shirt, maybe a challenge coin, maybe a book. All right. For those of you guys who are watching us recorded, thank you so much. I appreciate it. And I'm sure that you guys were all actually out there working and saving lives and keeping us safe. So that's really the important stuff. I'm glad you guys signed up for this so you can get a recorded version. Thank you so much for doing what you do. God bless you guys. Be safe out there. And I hope to see you at an in-person training soon.